Hi, welcome to episode number 33 of Whiskey Cast, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie, and in just a few minutes, part two of my interview with the man behind the Whiskey Bible, author Jim Murray. First, though, let's take a look at the news. Whiskey Live New York is now in the history books, and several new whiskeys made their debuts at Tavern on the Green last Wednesday night. The Malvini's 17-year-old Newwood made its first appearance, and Steve Hall of William Grant & Sons says it'll be appearing on store shelves starting this coming week.
The Newwood is something that we beat the bourbon companies to. Instead of waiting for them to use the oak barrels once and send them to us, we went to the Ozarks in Missouri and into Indiana, and we found some oak that we liked. We had the ship flat down the planks and create our own new wood or new oak barrels. They haven't seen bourbon. They're not been used once. We soaked them, we charred them, and as a result, taking a little something from the bourbon business. My question is now, can we sell it back to the Americans instead of us buying it from them? It hasn't been used yet for bourbon. So it was just an experiment on our part, because 2 years ago we did a 17-year-old Isla, using some Isla casks. This time around we're coming out with new wood. Again, it's a bottling that will probably last a year. And then we'll go a year without a 17-year-old, and maybe we'll come out with a 17-year-old, whatever, Madeira or whatever our distillery master manager prefers to create a new blend with. It just shows our creativity. We're using a 17-year-old to say, we're creative, we're trying to think different, and we're trying to be the leading edge and not a follower.
Also on the single malt front, the new 18- and 25-year-olds from Boonehaven. U.S. importer Peter Schwartz says they're the first new Boonehavens to hit the market in several years.
It's 100% first, second, and third used Oloroso sherry cask. And then the 25-year-old, we're taking a little twist. It'll be identical to the 12-year-old. It's aged 70% in American charred bourbon cask and 30% in Oloroso sherry butts. So on a scale of 1 to 10, the 25 is going to be roughly about a 7 on sweetness, about a 2 on peat. And the 18 is going to be about an 8 to 8.5 on sweetness and about a 2 on peat.
The Space Side isn't new, but it has a new designation that will appeal to Jewish whiskey lovers. Master distiller Andrew Shand says his single malt has become apparently the first Scotch whiskey to be declared kosher.
A rabbi came around the distillery a few weeks ago and we took him to the maltings. He saw the yeast being made, he saw the malt being made, and then we took him around the distillery, showed him the whiskey being made, and then we took him down to our bonded warehouses, and he didn't actually wait for the 12 years to make sure it was okay, but he had a look at the thing and he decided it was a kosher whiskey.
Speyside Distillers is also out with King's Crest, a new 25-year-old blend that has special meaning for Andrew Shand.
It's only got two different whiskies in it. It's got a North of Scotland grain that was built by our founder of our Speyside Distillery, George Christie, and it's got 1977 Glenlivet whiskey that was made by my father, who was the distillery manager at Glenlivet at the time. So I blended the two together. It's like my mentor and my father, and we came up with a very special whiskey. So I think we won a double gold at San Francisco, and we were tasting at Chicago, and it seems to be going down very, very well. Beautifully smooth, lovely, and easy to drink.
Finally, there's another new blend from Duncan Taylor that should arouse some interest. Ewan Shand has put together a 38-year-old blend.
Well, this is a blend that I put together. It's a 38-year-old blend. The youngest whiskey's 38, the oldest 42. It's a Duncan Taylor rare all-blended Scotch whiskey. In it, we've got Boonehaven, Highland Park, Glenburgie, Milton Duff, Glenlivet, and Springbank, and we've topped it off with some Invergordon. And we're looking at a 75% malt, 25% grain mix. What we did was typical of a company like ours that have got loads and loads of very, very old whiskies. Some of them go under strength in cask. So what we did, we matched up some under strength whiskies with over strength whiskies. So it's come out to a natural strength of 40.7%. And it's, it says 40 on the bottle, but it's 40.7%. And it's, you need to taste it.
I did, and straying a bit from my policy of not rating whiskeys, this one and the King's Crest are two of the best whiskeys I've tasted, period. course, when it comes to rating whiskeys, Jim Murray is considered by many to be the best in the business. His whiskey Bible has sold thousands of copies worldwide, and he's one of the few whiskey writers and critics who inspires controversy. Here's part two of my interview with Jim.
I have to ask, because you do have some critics out there, how do you respond to, say, the running joke that Jim Murray's never rated an Ardbeg less than 90, for instance?
I have. I certainly have. I mean, let's turn to the, let's grab a book here, and the first one I looked at, Ardbeg 1974 cast.
And not to take it seriously, but it's sort of a comment. Oh, it's
well,
Ardbeg.
The point is, that's just not true. I mean, there's Ardbeg single cast 270, Belgian only, 83. And it's got 21 on the nose, 21 on the taste, 20 on the finish, 21 on the balance, a bit hot with lots of oak to chew on. There was one of the young Ardbegs that they brought out, you know, that they've been bringing out these kind of 6 year olds. One of those, didn't get a particularly high mark. But the point of the fact is that Ardbeg, by and large, does tend to be rather good. It's to me the best distillery in the world, and if it is the best distillery in the world, and they have been careful in the cast that they've been selecting, then it's going to get a high mark. So I can't agree that nothing gets under 90, because that's just patently untrue. But yes, it does get a higher mark because it is a truly astonishing distillery.
I think that's more just as a joke than anything else, and not as a statement of fact, but as
I know what they're saying, but all I can do is judge on what I find. How many marks do you give, a succession of Pink Floyd LPs or something? You know, I mean, they happen to be pretty good, in my opinion, and a cut above the rest. Or, you know, you go to, I tell you what's quite interesting, right? You go to a soccer match, and it's, or I suppose you can do this in any sport, and you go along, and let's just say it's some kind of local league, alright? And, you know, 400 or 500 people turn up to watch this game, and the local press report it, and they give individual marks to each of the players. And the players on average get 8.3 marks, okay? Now you go to another game, say a premier game of soccer, watched by 60,000 people, and the entire team is full of internationals, as opposed to the part-timers you were watching the previous week. And scores are given, and the average score is 8 for those players. Does that mean to say that the guys who have got 8.3 who are part-timers are better than ones who get 8? No, because everything's relative. Everything's relative. So when Ardbeg gets a score like that, what I'm trying to take into account, I'm trying to a degree, take away that kind of bias on the local and the national. So people, one of the things that said to me is, how come you give such high scores to such little known distilleries? And my answer is, well, because they're still great whiskies. It's just that nobody's really picked up on it, or because the company that owns it have just never marketed it. But it's still out there. It's still a great, great whiskey. I just happen to think that Ardbeg is actually the best distillery in the world, as it happens. And yet, having said that, the Ardbeg of today, the whiskey that you're tasting today, isn't as good as the whiskey from 20 years ago. I'm not saying that because I'm an old-timer looking back on the good old days. It's, in my opinion, it's not as good simply because of the fact that the whiskey's made in a slightly different way, because of the malt that they're using. They have to buy the malt in now. They don't have their own maltings. And if you look at the high scores that have been given to the Ardbegs by me, they tend to be for the whiskies that were made in the days when they still had their maltings. So I do try to take kind of everything into account. But if there's a bad Ardbeg, I will mark it down. I don't care who it is. You know, it could be Ardbeg or any other distillery that I've, you know, publicly said is a great whiskey. I will mark it down if it's not up to scratch.
Now, what about blends? Because I know that you tend to give blends high ratings, or at least a little more consideration, perhaps, than other writers do. How do you score blends versus single malts? Same method?
Well, funny, isn't it? You said to me a bit earlier, you said, well, would I have a whiskey, at the end of a hard day? And, yeah, of course I do. And if I do, I bet you on average 60% of the time, 70% of the time, if it's scotch, it'll be a blended scotch. And the reason is because I think blends are as good as malts. And when you think about it, they should actually be better, because I get about 3 or 4 deliveries of whiskey a day here. I mean, I'm talking now, and you're talking to me over the phone. I'm in my tasting lab. Now, I get probably, I don't know, 3 or 4 deliveries a day. And when it's a single malt coming in from Scotland, from an independent bottler or from a distiller, I look at that and say, oh, that's interesting. I've not seen that before. I look forward to seeing that. But because I look at the age and I look at the cask style or strength or whatever, I've got a rough idea of what to expect, and I'm looking forward to it, and that's about it. When a blend comes in, and I've never seen this blend before, I tell you, my heart really starts, going up a notch. And the reason is because for a blend, you know, the blender is usually starting to a degree with a white canvas, and then he can draw something with it. Now, what he draws can often depend on the whiskies that he has available to him, and often I don't know what they are until I've opened that bottle and got it in the glass. But the point is that all kinds of things are capable. And I love some absolutely common and garden blends, which people will never give the time of day to. They don't give it a second glance because it's background. These whiskies are background noise because they've been there all their lives. So that they go to the shelves and they see all these distilleries, all these single malts, all these ages, and they don't take a second glance at the blends because the blends were always there. And that is a great shame, because some of those blends knock the living crap out of some of those malts. And I think that I've never lost sight of that. Okay, I'm one of the guys who began it all by banging the gong many, many years ago for single malts, to get people into single malt frame of mind. And my God, there's been a success. But I'm trying to grab people back a little bit and say, hang on guys, don't take your eye off the ball here. And the fact that, I did a book called Classic Blended Scotch. I mean, think how many books have been written on whiskey, right? That is the only one in the English language that exists purely on blended whiskey. It's a joke. Because there are some stunning whiskeys out there.
Are you able, when you get a blend, are you able, with your nose and your knowledge of single malts, are you able to pick out the individual whiskies that make up that blend?
Not always. I mean, occasionally, yes. You get the odd one coming through, and you think, whoop, and you just feel that the blender has maybe overdone it slightly with something, and you've got a rough idea of what it might be. But you can't always actually get it. And to be honest, you don't always want to. If I tell you something that's quite weird, 20 years ago, nearly 20 years ago, I was winning prizes. Before I was actually writing on this full-time, I was going around winning kind of nosing prizes. I remember once going into a shop in Perth, in a liquor store there, and they'd had this competition all day where they had 6 whiskies and you had to say what they were. And if you got it right, you won a bottle of whiskey of your own choice. And the shop was just closing as I went in. And they said, oh, what, before we close, do you want to be the last person to ever go at this? I said, yeah, fine. And I had a quick go, and I got them all right. And they just looked at me in amazement. And they said, oh, so I said, great. And I chose my whiskey. Now, I bet you, if I did the same thing today, I wouldn't get it. Because 18, 20 years ago, there wasn't the same number of whiskies available that there are today. And my knowledge wasn't quite so profound. So I was used to tasting mainly the whiskies that were kind of available. I did, even at that stage, I was getting one or two samples coming in from one or two friendly people in the industry that I knew. But mainly my knowledge was based on what was around. Now, in a way, I kind of know too much now, because I would taste one now, and I would probably have a short list of three that it could possibly be. Not because there's more whiskies, but that'd be part of it, but also because of the fact that now my experience has meant that I've tasted from most distilleries whiskies at varying ages from different casks. And you can get a number of whiskies that are very, very similar at different ages, different times as they go through their various maturation cycles. And I would basically now completely confuse myself. So if I got a blend in the glass and I'm looking at particular styles, that's exactly what I'll be looking for, styles and influences. Doesn't necessarily mean that I will pick the distillery, but I could certainly pick the style that the blend has gone for, or, if not gone for, the one that he's had a gun put to his head and been told that he's got to use because that's all he's got.
Now, you've done some blending yourself. Why have we never seen a Jim Murray blended whiskey with your colleagues?
Well, you never know. It might happen. I mean, to be honest, I've kind of kept away from that to a degree, because I don't want to use my name for that kind of thing. I don't want people to think, oh, he's using his name to make extra money on that. I don't know. There's this funny thing that people think, oh, if you start doing your own blends, then you're no longer independent. There's an argument pro and against that. I don't think that's actually true. I think that I could do my own blend and still remain absolutely 100% independent, which I maintain that I always am. I think that can be done simply because of the fact that I would do it purely out of fun. And it is great fun. Blending is terrific fun. And one of the reasons I've enjoyed blending so much is because it gives me a chance to actually put my kind of skills, if you like, to the test. And also, if I'm criticizing someone and they kind of say, well, what the bloody hell do you know? What have you done? I can say, well, actually, I've created that and I did that and I did that. And so they go, oh, fair enough. They can't say, oh, you're just some happy amateur just banging around. You know, I can look at them in the eye as an equal. And that means that when I'm writing, that just gives me that little bit more concrete under my feet, I think.
Believe it or not, there's still some ground we haven't covered yet. And you'll hear the final chapter of my talk with Jim Murray on the next episode of Whiskey Cast. That's all for this edition of Whiskey Cast. I'd love to hear from you. My email address is comments@whiskeycast.com. And you can always find more information at the Whiskey Cast website. Whiskey Cast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2006, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.